On this edition of the Scott Radley Show podcast, we are talking with Mike Fortune about all kinds of stuff in the brightest conversation in Hamilton podcasting, from Ukraine and whether Canadians would fight if our country was invaded like Ukraine has been, to whether or not people who have done horrible things in Canada should be deported, to whatever. We've got it all. It's a long list today. Stick around.
Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
Michael Jameson Fortune. I don't know if Jameson is the right name. I guess a middle name every time and I get it wrong every time, but it's Michael Fortune is the first and last one. Sir, how are you today?
Scotty, I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me on again on this beautiful Friday.
It is a beautiful, except for one person. You know who it's not a beautiful Friday for?
Who's that?
So there is a woman in Manchester, England. And the story here, her name is Leonie Fildes or Fields. I'm not sure how you say it. Anyway, F-I-L-D-E-S is how the story says it's spelled. She earlier this week decided to go out and have a few gin and tonics with the girls and a few other things. Apparently, she was, by her own admission, well slobber knockered when she decided during a conversation that the fight in Ukraine needed her help. So she tried to order an Manchester, England to Ukraine.
Yeah, well, you know what? Gin makes you do some pretty silly, funny things.
Which was going to be 45.
I've never had to call a Uber, though, to go to another country.
Well, 4,500 pounds, so whatever that works out to in dollars. So we're talking like probably $8,000. Thankfully for her, the Uber had a little problem putting the bill through. They don't normally get that much. I don't know what she would have done had she woken up out of her drunken stupor in a war zone. I mean, lovely of her to think to help.
Well, yeah, hey, it's amazing what people do and think, but yeah, you wake up and you give your head a shake. Mind you probably don't want to give your head a shake after having that much gin, that's for sure.
If you've had enough gin that you thought this was a good idea, then
you don't want to shake your head. Russian vodka, probably, could she?
Well, it's probably banned, as it should be right now. But, I was thinking, Mike, I'm not going to ask you about drunken things, but not even drunken, just in general. Does anything come to mind for you when you look back? It could have involved alcohol or not at all, because many of the bad decisions we've all made have had nothing to do with that. Is there something that comes to mind that you say, I either did that or I was going to do that, and that was a really bad idea that Mike Fortune had once upon a time?
I'm very thankful that back in my day, and I assume yours as well too, there weren't the Instagrams, the cell phones, the instant snaps of pictures or videos to catch what Mike Fortune did or was in the middle of doing. There have been some moments, yes, in my day, when, man, I am really glad I towed the line, but I never crossed it. But it could have potentially been disastrous. Put it this way, I probably wouldn't be sitting here talking to you. How about that?
Well, see, I look back and I can think of so many moments that I think now, and I think if my kids had done what I did, I would have been furious at them for being such imbeciles. Yeah. And yet I did them. And again, thankfully, now here's the thing. With you, probably with almost everybody listening, with me, the ideas that I had, the things I was doing were not malicious. They weren't intended to be hurtful. They were just monumentally stupid. And right at the top of my list, I was thinking today before I brought you on, I was going to ask you this when I saw this story. And I thought, what would be up there with the stupidest thing? And I've got a long list, Mike. But back in high school, we had exams in the morning and in the afternoon. And so between exams, we decided a bunch of us to walk over to the mall. And one of the guys who we were with, we thought it would be hilarious if we threw him into the Goodwill box.
Oh, no.
And which you know, seemed hilarious at the time. What we didn't know was there's no way to open it from the inside.
Yes,
so,
that's right.
So we threw Graham into the Goodwill box, and an hour or so later after lunch came out, and he was still in there, and it was really hot out that day, and he had now, like, he was entirely soaked through, almost dehydrated, and we're like, you know, you look back now as an adult and you think that could have gone horribly, horribly wrong.
But it went really bad. And to the point, I think, haven't they even changed those boxes because of that exact thing? Because
See?
The homeless people were trying to get in there?
Well, anything. It's just, and I look and I go, thank goodness. I mean, but for the grace of God, honestly. I mean, there are so many things that we did that were stupid that you look and you go, what could have happened if this had not gone right?
So I do have one thing. It's not as drastic as that, I don't think, if we have time. For years, I lived on my own in downtown Hamilton, and there was a certain area where out on the ledge or on the stoop of this apartment was, as you know, I'm a big Elvis fan. There was one of these half, like an Elvis bust. You know how you see these Elvis busts in variety stores and all this stuff? So I really, really, really wanted it. And so my buddy and I concocted a plan on how I was going to get this Elvis bust. Well, we get in the car, we drive to where we need to go. And when I get to said location, it's a little higher than I thought it was going to be. And I am jumping, trying to get it, and I knock it. And instead of catching it, I have butterfingers, and it falls through my hands, crashes everywhere. He bolts one way, I bolt another way, and there we go. And the Elvis bust was no longer. But
it was busted.
Crazy moments.
Yeah, we've all done these things. Thankfully, none of us have gone to a war zone that I know of, but in a drunken stupor. But there you go.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Mike, last night on the show, we opened the phone lines, threw out a question for people and opened the phone lines, and people just flooded the lines. We had so many calls, we couldn't get to them all. And the question was, it was based on a poll that was done in the States at Quinnipiac University, and it asked Americans, now it was Americans, granted, not Canadians, but it asked Americans, if your country was invaded like Ukraine had been, would you stay and fight or would you run for cover? And it was almost half of Americans said, I'm out of here. I'm not sticking around to fight. And I was frankly not terribly surprised, but I was disappointed, because you would like to think that you would have people do what the Ukrainians are doing and say, my way of life is worth fighting for. But what do you think? Do you think that if it was happened to Canada, if all of a sudden Canada was under attack, do you think most Canadians would stay and fight, or do you think a huge percentage of us would say, no, I'm finding somewhere safe and getting out of here?
First response and instinct would be, Scott, I think majority would run and not want to fight. Maybe I might wake up tomorrow and think a little differently, but I do believe that is the case. I think we live in a very privileged country. I think we're all very privileged. A majority of us are privileged individuals. And we're very comfortable. We're in that hammock, you know.
That's the word.
Which one? Comfortable?
Comfortable. I think that's the word that it becomes. Why I feel the same way. I think we have lived in great comfort, and that's not a bad thing. Nope. It's a good thing that we have this style of life. But I think we've become so comfortable that if you now said someone might shoot you and someone might kill you, I think that we have a lot of people that would say, "Nope, not interested in that whatsoever."
Yeah, and you know, what we are watching on the news, to us, it's, you know, we can turn this off. We can change the channel at any given time. So we truly don't know what war is. Now, I'm not talking about those who have served our country and so on and so forth who've been there. I'm talking about majority of us that don't serve our country, that have never held a weapon, that don't understand what true combat is. So I do believe, again, Canadians would probably run and not want to get involved and eventually maybe be taken over. It pains me to say that, but that's what I kind of believe.
Well, we've also, I mean, something else that we've done, and again, I don't know if this is for good or for bad, but it certainly, I think, factors into this. We have, as a society, I believe that we have decided or convinced ourselves that being happy all the time is number one, and extending our life as long as possible or as long as we want it to extend is number two on the list. Both of those things fly in the face of sticking around and fighting for your country.
Yes, agreed. But there is that also. There's that thing also called terror. And as much as, you know, I think we want all of that, what you alluded to, Scott, I don't know if we know how to deal with what could potentially happen to us. Disfigurement, death. You always say you'll fight to the bitter end, but until you're truly put into that position, will you? I can probably say I wouldn't know what to do. I would be at a complete loss. because, again, I'm in a world where I don't understand what is truly going on in the trenches. And, you know, you look at what's happening with these poor Ukrainians, and heaven forbid, we don't know how this is going to end, but even the Russians that are involved that don't want to be involved, you know, there's so much PTSD that goes on, and the terror that is going on that will just last forever. I don't think we have the mindset here in Canada to be able to put up with that and to deal with that as we, if we were to survive.
And I want to say very clearly that I like to believe that I would stick around and fight, but you know what? We don't know until that moment comes. I like to think I would, but boy, it's still to us very much a hypothetical.
And like I alluded to, yes, I know this is going on and it's horrific and it's horrible, but we can easily turn it off. We can easily go on with our lives and go to work and you know, spend a day in Toronto like me and the family did yesterday. And we don't know what's going on halfway around the world because we're not living it. So it's one of those things where it's horrible to think, and I'm probably in Europe. I would like to think that I would, but I don't know if I actually would, my friend.
Let me ask you one more thing. The last caller yesterday, I believe it was Bob, who was our last caller yesterday on this topic before we had to cut it off, raised something that I found also. I wish we had a lot more time, and I'm going to bring it up with you. He said, and if it wasn't Bob, I apologize to who said this, but we also see Zelensky, who has stayed, has not hidden, is on the front lines, is out with the people, is wearing fatigues, is involved in this thing. Do you believe that our political leaders would do that? Would lead, not just lead, but lead by example the way he is?
So you're referring to a Doug Ford or a Justin Trudeau and anyone in that MPP role?
Sure. Pick anybody in government or in politics, because it could be a different party in power at that time. Look at anybody who's in the House of Commons or Queen's Park. Do you see them doing that, or do you see them finding safe haven?
Look, not knowing what their personalities are and who they truly are, do I believe it? No, I don't think they would. I believe, like majority of the countries, they would probably run and take cover and not want to be seen and to protect themselves as best they can. I truly can't see it. I can't.
I can't either, and it's sad, and maybe we're wrong, and maybe we're underestimating some of the people who are in office. And for the record, I think it's a slightly different scenario when it's the President of the United States, for example, because that person is, in fact, still the leader of the free world, and there's something very symbolic on top of everything else if that person was to be killed. There's a difference between the President and the Prime Minister of a smaller country like Canada, numbers-wise, power-wise, everything else. I think the reason Ukraine and Ukrainians are fighting so hard in a lot of ways is because of the example of Zelensky and his cabinet still being out there. But maybe I'm wrong, and I hope I am, but I could not envision for a minute Canada's political leaders doing the same thing.
No,
not for a minute.
And again, we watch what Zelensky's doing, and it truly is remarkable. And again, yeah, we won't know if that is the reason why they're fighting and doing what they're doing behind the scenes. And again, they live half a world away from us. We don't get what their lifestyle is like on a daily basis. We don't live it. We don't see it. Again, we're very privileged here in Canada and the U.S. where these are things we just don't. Hopefully we don't have to worry about, but at any given time that could change. You know, you're seeing so much which is going on with Putin and Kim Jong-un and, you know, the push of a button. But, you know, that's what I find makes this all interesting too. Sure, they could hit a button and it could be nuclear in World War III and we're over, but the fear that they're putting in people, the fear that they're putting in the rest of the world with this slow grinding terror of shelling, and those are the long-term effects that I think are truly going to affect what's going on and which would affect Canadians as well. Again, they could hit a button and it could all be done. I think we're all fairly aware of that, I think. But the slow terror that they're putting them through, I think that is what scares a lot of people.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
As of Monday, pretty much not everything, but close to everything is going to feel pretty normal in this province. Mask mandates are going, and you can cross the border pretty soon without having to do all kinds of stuff. And like everything, we seem to be returning to some kind of normal? Does that imbue you with a sense of confidence and optimism, or are you terrified that this is going to lead us right back down into a COVID rabbit hole?
No, we're feeling pretty confident here in the Fortune household. We will continue to be smart. We will continue to sanitize the hands. And, you know, I think we will also continue to wear the masks, perhaps not all the time, but in larger crowds where there isn't the proper ventilation. We were out in Toronto yesterday, and, you know, we were still doing what we needed to do, but I noticed there were a lot of people that weren't. But overall, we're feeling confident. I got two kids that are going back to school, both in the Catholic school board. We've had some chats around the table, and they will continue to wear masks, and we fully support that if that's the choice they want to make. And if things eventually open up even more and they want to take the masks off, they feel comfortable with that. You know, we're trying to treat them like adults and let them kind of make some decisions themselves. So moving forward, I think we're feeling okay here, Scotty. What about yourself, man?
Well, see, before I get to myself, I just want to say, see, you are the example, I think, of what people are, what a lot of people hope is the way to do this. The dropping the mask mandate in schools or whatever else doesn't mean you're not allowed to wear a mask. It means it's your choice based on your risk assessment and your decision making. And so if you've decided the kids will continue to wear a mask, that's totally fine. Mm-hmm. And if you decide that you're not going to, based on numbers and everything else, I'm of the opinion now, Mike, that if you look at the numbers, that it's time to let people start making some of their own decisions. That we've had a lot of government intervention, and it's been in a lot of cases with cause, but you don't, in my mind, the soonest possible moment you can get governments to back off as opposed to clinging to power, you do it. I'm not saying there should be no involvement in government in these things. I've agreed with a lot of the moves, or many of the moves that governments have made along this. But I don't believe that it should carry on forever. And when you can let people make their own decisions, I believe you should do that as quickly as possible.
Yeah, you know, at the end of the day, you know, that's what you have to do. We're individuals. We have our own mindsets and how we want to go about doing things. The government has done some really good things during this 2 years. The government has made some mistakes, and I've been a firm believer, and I've said this from day one. There was no playbook when all of this started, and they were kind of moving along as the bar was constantly being moved on them as well, including the scientific facts and evidence that were coming. And they were doing. I truly do believe they were doing what was best for us at the time. Sometimes you probably raise an eyebrow and go, well, wait, does that make sense? But at the end of the day, to your point, yes, we now need to take the onus upon ourselves. And a lot of it goes back to what we were taught as little kids. Wash your hands, maintain proper hygiene, you know, even little things. Cough into your sleeve now. And there's a much more acceptance now of if you're not feeling too well, don't show up to that meeting or don't head out to the mall. And I think people are starting to grasp that at least now. That might wane over time and move on. But we have to also, I think, now try to build up our immune system now if we can. I'm a little not terrified. I'm a little concerned about that. We've been so clean and so particular for so long. What have we done to ourselves with other potential things that could
the flu,
potentially harm us?
The flu, the cold, whatever else. Sure. And I'm looking right now as we speak. The New York Times runs a daily graphic of COVID cases. Now, again, these are in the States. It's different from here. But, you know, I had a friend go across to the States the other day, and they said, you cross the border and it's like COVID doesn't exist. There's no masks. There's no distancing. It's life is back to normal. And you're thinking, okay, well, that must mean that COVID is going to run wild in the States because, well, no, according to the New York Times, and it's a reliable, trustworthy source, things went way up several months ago with the second one. What do you call it? Omicron. But now it's way down. I mean, it's down almost to the lowest point it has been. And this is with people back to normal. And I look and I think clearly in the States where they're living the way most places where they're living, like we're now being told you can live, it's okay. And so I applaud the governments, again, for those that are releasing some of the restrictions for doing so, because governments don't like to give up powers that they grab. That's not a political thing. That's all governments. You get power, you like to hold power. So good for them, for the ones that are giving some of it back and saying, we don't need to do this anymore. You can decide. You're an intelligent person, presumably.
Yeah, and you know, and again, a big kudos and a standing ovation to the scientists and the people in the labs who've allowed us to get to this point, coming up with these vaccines that have allowed us to be able to move forward. And, you know, do we throw in there, you know, because we're getting closer to election time, that's why governments are kind of doing some of these things. I guess people could throw that out there potentially as well. But, you know, it's been 2 years now. We know a lot more now than we did on March 12, 2020. So,
well, if it's an election thing, Mike, if it's an election thing, there are a lot of people who don't agree with this. So you're not, you may be winning some votes, but you're losing other votes. I kind of reject that whole election thing because I'm not sure you're moving too far forward. If you hate the local government or the provincial government or the federal government, you're going to keep hating them no matter what they do.
That is very true.
So,
well said.
But here's the one thing, though, that I really hope out of this. There will be some people that'll get COVID if they don't wear a mask or if they don't distance. It's inevitable, just like the flu, just like cold, just like anything else. Don't then turn around and blame the government if you made a decision. I agree that you should have the opportunity to make that decision, but you then are responsible for your decision. That, to me, is the bare minimum. Don't then say, oh, man, I got COVID and the government never should have let me make that decision. No. You still, like the Fortunes are doing with their kids at school, you still have the opportunity to wear a mask if you think that that's the better way to go, or to socially distance or stay home. Don't blame a government if things don't go right for you. Just, it's you, and that's okay.
It's called taking responsibility. Called, you know, manning up and saying, or womaning up, or however you want to say it nowadays. I got to be politically correct.
Personing up.
Taking responsibility for what you do or don't do. And, you know, we should be very grateful and thankful that we're in this country where we get to have these opportunities to have those opinions. There are other countries out there that don't get to, as we know. And you look at a country like a China or something like that, they've had it right for decades where they've been wearing masks. Now, I know the COVID numbers are going up, but again, if you want to continue to wear a mask, all the power to you. I think it has become socially acceptable. Yeah, you're going to have your odd person or your odd Karen make a comment or something, but hopefully we've gotten beyond and past that, and we can live how we want to live, whether it be masks or maskless.
We'll see. I've said it on the show a couple times that I think that there will be stink eye both ways. If you're a mask absolutist who believes that masks must still be worn and you're furious that this is stopping, I think some of them are going to be giving serious stink eye to those who don't wear masks. And those who don't and think that it's passed are probably going to be smirking at those who do, thinking you're a loser for continuing. It's not the case. This is the whole idea. You can make the decision for you. And I believe we're at a point when that's acceptable. That's okay to do that. If you're compromised, make the right decision. Don't just, you know, just because you're allowed, Mike, to run across the highway with a blindfold on doesn't mean you do it, right? We have the freedom to, but you got to understand, if you're going to do that, something bad may happen. If you're compromised, don't say, well, they said I don't have to wear a mask, and interpret that to mean I can't wear a mask. No, look, do what's right for you with your health and then live with what happens.
Look at the whole seatbelt debate many years ago when they became mandatory. You know, you have a choice not to wear a seatbelt, and if you don't wear one, A, the fines can be astronomical, and B, the you know, you're taking your life into someone's hands. They've put these in, so now you have to. This is a choice now that you have to make to save yourself.
Yep.
Am I going off here?
No. It's you get the decision now. Don't blame someone. Don't blame someone, but make the decision and look after yourself.
I've made the choice also to not have a beverage, to drink anything with alcohol. I've been going on it's been a year and a half now, Scott, without any alcohol.
Good for you.
It's funny when we do go out and we're with small friends or whatever the case might be, and they're trying to give me a drink. I'm like, no, it's okay. It's funny how people look at me. Oh, well, what's wrong? Why aren't you doing that? There's nothing wrong with me. I've decided that I don't want to have alcohol in my system. I just don't want to do it. So, but it's funny how there's that stigma. There's something wrong with me, apparently.
We got to go. But do you have a lot of small friends, or did you mean small groups of friends?
Well, yeah, they came out the wrong way. But, you know,
Mike has a lot of little friends.
I have a group of friends that I like to go out with from time to time. And, you know, it's weird for them to get their head around the fact that Mike Fortune doesn't want to have a beverage. I will go. I'll order a non-alcoholic beer, though. And guess what? I feel just fine. Thank you very much.
And something else, it has really helped your hair growth. It's thickened that hair in a big way. So there's something about that.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
This was a couple days ago, but the truck driver, the former truck driver who caused the Humboldt Broncos bus crash, I mean, just a tragic, tragic story. Everyone knows it. I don't have to rehash the details. Everyone knows the story about it. But he is now in the immigration system because it appears he's going to be deported, and he's lost his first bid to stay in Canada. Now he has to go through an admissibility hearing, and it looks, though, like from everything we're hearing, that he is now going to be sent back to India when his sentence is fully served and he is going to be kicked out of the country. You know what? This was a horrendous accident. It was a terrible tragedy. I cannot for the life of me, though, imagine what Canada benefits by deporting this guy, and why this particular case, and I know the outcome, I know what happened, but I find it hard to believe that almost anybody who has ever driven a car or a truck or anything has not done something ill-advised in that car or truck that just by good fortune or as some deity watching over us, that we did not end up in that same circumstance. I find this punitive to the point of being almost annoying.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of, and again, I don't know all the story, the backstory to everything, and maybe we all don't. Was there something in his immigration status that did not allow him to be here any longer? Were there some sort of rules or stipulations put in place during his time that were here that maybe we are not truly aware of? That's the only thing I can think of, because I agree with you, Scott. I don't see how this is going to help anybody. The horrific tragedy, it has happened. He stood up, he took it. He wasn't going to fight anything back, which I think was very helpful to the family. So unless there are things behind the scenes that we're not completely aware of, I don't get it either. It's kind of a head scratcher.
To me, it just seems, if this, like what he did, okay, he was an inexperienced truck driver. He made mistakes for sure. You may have even said he was irresponsible. And I'm okay with any or all of those descriptions. And yet, as I say, I would be finding it difficult to believe that anybody listening right now has not done something that could be described as irresponsible when driving a vehicle and easily could have killed someone. Now, what made his much worse was that the bus that he hit was filled with people and that they end up being died and horribly injured. But it was not a series of accidents. It was one accident with a lot of people involved. It doesn't make it less tragic. But if you were to have hit a minivan with three people in it, would they have said he should be deported? Clearly not. Or if it was a car with one person in it who had been killed doing exactly the same thing as he did, would he have been deported? Mm-hmm. I would bet you any money, no.
Do we dare bring into this, Scott, you know, the race and the ethnicity of the gentleman? You know, I would hate to think that Canada is doing something like that, because, you know, I can think of a horrible, horrible accident that happened with an extremely well-off individual who was partying out in Miami and came home on a plane, Muzzo, I think the last name was, and, you know, he's done his time, I guess, as according to the judge, but, you know, he's got lots of money, and, you know, he's basically out doing his thing. But there's
the difference
is a typical white guy, so I don't know. Yeah, does race play into this potentially?
Well, the difference is that Muzzo, as I understand it, unless someone corrects me on this one, he is a Canadian, so there's no deportation option for him, whereas the driver of this truck came from India, and therefore he could be sent back to his country. But
which leads me to what I said earlier then. Is there something in his immigration status?
No, not that I can find.
His best behavior for so many months or years or whatever the case might be. I don't know.
But even if that had been the case, I look at this and I think, well, was this a case where he was doing something? I don't believe that there was anything malicious in what he did. It was terrible. The outcome was terrible. I don't want someone to think I'm minimizing it, but I don't think he set out to crash into a bus. He was not acting as a terrorist. He wasn't doing something that would be where you would say he set out to cause great harm. This was a horrible accident. And I bet you that if we gathered all the information, I'd love to know how many trucks were involved in an accident with a car or another truck or something over the course of the last 10 years. Now, again, he had the horrible misfortune, as well as they did, of the bus that he hit was filled with young people, and it was a horrible outcome. But I look at this and I simply, Mike, I can't get my head around the fact that I bet you that even every person on the immigration board or the deportation board, if you were to hook them up to a lie detector machine, would say, at one time, sure, I've run a stop sign, or I've driven more than 20 kilometers over the limit, or I've turned right on red and cut someone off, or I've nearly hit a pedestrian that I didn't see when they started to walk across a crosswalk and I wasn't paying attention. We've all had those close calls or done something where we've made a mistake in our vehicle. I don't see how this helps anybody. I don't see how this makes us a better country. And I'm not being unnecessarily sympathetic to him. He's not, well, he's sort of a sympathetic guy, I suppose, in one way, that he did everything we asked. He pleaded guilty. He didn't fight it, as you said. But I just don't see how this benefits our country to say, because you made a horrible mistake, that we're going to get rid of you. Where how many people who are immigrants, if we want to go down that road, because I'm saying it only because they're eligible for deportation then, have committed crimes of decision that we don't deport.
Yeah, it would be interesting to dig into those numbers and know what they truly are. The only other thing I can maybe think of, and this is probably a stretch, is does it give these families potentially even more closure? In the fact that we don't have to see him around here anymore. Again, it might be a stretch, but maybe that is also part of what they're thinking in the healing process of the families. And again, I don't know. I'm not these families. I don't know if that's part of it.
I mean, look, you can make that case. I believe you could make that case, but you could also make that case for every other person who could be subject to deportation for every other crime or accident. I cannot believe, and of course I've not looked at every single case. I cannot believe that every single immigrant who has come here, who is possibly, who deportation could be an option for, who has ever had a car accident that has killed someone, I cannot believe they've all been deported.
Right, but I also don't think we can just chalk this up as a normal car accident. A car accident is a car accident, yes, but this took not just 16 lives or whatever the exact number was, and I apologize, it's been a few years, but all the lives of those who are still living with it, dealing with it, for those young men who've been able to kind of come back and rehabilitate, but the families, the aunts, the uncles, the grandparents, you know, this is a big number. This isn't one truck driver one minivan.
No, it's a huge scale, but again, I go back to my point. It was bad luck, really, that he hit that, as opposed to, would he be getting deported if instead of the Humboldt Broncos bus crossing the street when he arrived at that intersection, it had been a car with one person in it? And I would argue no. And the only difference is not then what his actions were. His actions would have been the same that would have led to the death of someone in a car. His actions didn't change. The only thing then is the unfortunate luck of what was the other vehicle crossing the road. And I don't believe that a case of luck should be the difference between being deported or not. In that particular case, he still did wrong, and he's gone to prison for it. Anyway, we got to run. I just think it's Canada overdoing it here. It's the immigration system overdoing it. I don't think it helps anyone. I think it's mean spirited, quite honestly.
I don't know if I agree with that, Scott.
I'm not showing a lack of sympathy to the victims, the families of the players and everyone else who was involved. I feel terrible, terrible, terrible for them. But anyone else who has had a family or a family member killed in a car accident by someone, should they not have received the same treatment then? And I guarantee you that it's not unanimous.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
By the way, what I have up on my computer screen, and I'm not necessarily proud of this right now. It's not that. What I've got up on my computer screen, I've taken lately. I've realized that I am so desperate to get away on vacation. I now have a live stream of the port of Miami, just watching cruise ships leave the port and head out to sea. That is now my viewing excitement. That's how bad it's
become. Are you and Monica about to make the plunge then? Are you ready to go sooner than later at this point?
Oh, yeah. We've got one booked, but it's still okay. 3 or 4 months off. And I'm looking at this thinking I'm just watching this and I'm ready to go. I don't care on what. I don't care if it's on, well, maybe I don't want to go on an oligarch's yacht. Although, you know, if they want to like sell those at auction, I could get one for a couple $100, I would do it. I've reached the point now of almost... It's almost become obsessive that I have to get away somewhere. I don't know why.
I alluded to it earlier in the program. We were in Toronto yesterday and we were waiting in line somewhere doing something. And there was this beautiful picture on TV that was showing the beach and the water and these little huts. And my wife is like you, Scott. She's salivating at the fact of us wanting to get away on a beach and let all your troubles go away. I was fine with it for quite a while, but I think like you now I'm starting to get that itch where I am thinking about it, and boy, wouldn't it be nice to smell in that fresh salt air and the fresh air and the water and the sand between your toes. We're getting there as well, my friend.
Well, and it seems as though almost everybody that I know on Facebook is south right now, because all my Facebook field is just being bombarded with beach pictures. It's like I'm the only one. You and me are the only two, and Ben, who's back at the station, although for all I know, he could be doing this from down in the States somewhere.
Well, hey, you, Ben and I guess, are the only ones that are hard at work.
Clearly.
You know, we put priorities first.
Yeah, clearly. March break and everybody that I know has gone south. My jealousy is not an attractive quality. I understand that, but I'm being honest here. It's flaring a little bit today. Yesterday was St. Patrick's Day. Today is when I'm feeling green. So
there's well said. The one little thing holding us back. I know you two aren't empty nesters, but you have kids that are, you know, they're old enough. They're out. They're kind of doing their own thing, so on and so forth. We still have our kids are still a little on the younger side, where school is a priority. So just being able to pack up and go at crucial times during their schooling careers, we can't do as easily as we did a few years ago, if you know what I'm saying.
Abandon them. Leave them at home. They'll figure it out.
Run wild. There's a hot tub in the back. Just enjoy that, kids.
As long as there's some macaroni and cheese and chunky soup in the cupboard, they'll be fine. They'll find their way. They know how to work a can opener.
You know what?
Boiling
it's not even
water.
Mac and cheese anymore. You know what the kids love? They love the ramen. You know, you go to Costco and you buy these big boxes of just add hot water and they're fine.
Yes, and yesterday
we do feed them well, I promise you.
Well, and yesterday I discovered something, and like this is we're so far off where I was going to go with this hour. We'll get back on track in a second, but we made we rarely make macaroni and cheese, but yesterday it was just one of those nights, and because Monica always cooks, but last night we just said, well, it's macaroni and cheese night, and I absolutely so earlier in the week or last week, I can't remember, I had Brody on from Dawson's Hot Sauce. He was the guy whose sauces are on Hot Ones. I doused it in some of his hot sauce. I got to tell you, forget ketchup. This is the new thing. This is the way to go. Oh.
Oh, yeah, now they are still good. I have a couple of his sauces in my cupboard I've been able to go to. And I agree. I'm kind of like you. Instead of going to the ketchups or the mustards, I do like a really nice hot sauce. And I will put hot sauce on just about just about everything.
You're like that old lady in the commercial with the Frank's hot sauce, yes. But you're not going to repeat the same line. Yes. Now, I'm not allowed to be around anyone right now because apparently my breath, despite numerous brushings of the teeth, I still reek like a garlic factory, but that's okay. I'll live
with it. You have the same issue I do. My wife can smell it 3 days later on me sometimes.
Yeah. There is a story that a poll, it was a story based on a poll that I find amazing. HMD Global, I don't know who that is, but they did a poll asking smartphone users. Now, I know for a while you did a smartphone purge where you, like you're talking about, you haven't had a drink in a year and a half. You did a long time where you did not go on social media, but they asked smartphone users about their addiction to it and everything else. And of course, everybody is addicted to their smartphone. That's not even news anymore. That's just, we accept that everybody gets frantic if they don't have their phone near them. But the other one that was so amazing was that over half of people said, if they are looking at their phone and the power, the battery level is down into the, where it turns red and starts giving you warnings, that now is enough for people to begin having anxiety. Yeah, if you have 5% battery, you will now get anxiety. I'm amazed that we have reached the point where we've allowed this to become the driving factor in our lives.
Because and I think it's more the kids. I don't know what this survey was like in regards to age and demographics, but I know for kids, and I'm using my daughter as a pure example here, I think she actually carries a charger around with her now. Because heaven forbid, if it gets down to that 15-16% level, all heck might break loose. That's just the world we've come to. It's to me, it truly doesn't bother me. It's like, okay, I'll go plug it in and leave it alone for a couple hours. I don't care. But we have become so dependent on these things, Scott. It's actually quite a shame. Yeah, I know we're laughing and joking about it, but it's quite a shame that we have become so dependent on these devices running our lives.
According to this poll, 3 in 10 people would never, ever leave their home without their smartphone. They simply would not leave. And I that's okay. That probably doesn't surprise me. But again, it's the idea that, I mean, Pavlov did that experiment with the dog where you ring the bell and and the dog would salivate. You create a reaction by repetition or something. We now have done that to ourselves with this low battery power thing, that if we see things getting down too low, we have physical reactions to that. That's amazing to me that we've gotten to that point.
I want to just clarify, I don't think we've done it. These companies have done it to us. Don't you think?
Both.
The companies have done it to us.
They've tried. They've created the playing field where this can happen, but we've been the ones who have, I mean, look, and I'm every bit as guilty as the next one, but we've done it to ourselves. They've let us. They've allowed it to happen. Maybe they've even pushed it to happen, but you know, no heroin dealer has ever inserted the needle into your arm.
Yeah, I don't have the angst though. If my battery's down, it's like I really couldn't care less. Again, I think I just like to deprive myself. I do all these little things to kind of test myself. I think it's this younger generation and how we've become so dependent on phones. We can't think for ourselves. We don't know answers to something. Just Google it. We don't know where we're going. Forget about learning how to read a map. Or going to Canadian Tire and buying one of those things and keeping it in your glove box. Just go to Google or to your maps, and it will tell you how to get there. It will tell you where the accidents are. It will tell you what roads are closed. But heaven forbid, if something does go wrong and you're driving, for example, and Google doesn't have the right answer or doesn't know that the street's under construction. You know, these poor people that can't start to think for themselves, because that's what's happening. We're not thinking for ourselves anymore. They're going to be at a complete loss. And it's a real shame to think that this isn't going to get better. If anything, Scotty, it's probably going to get worse.
You mentioned GPS. Like I wonder if how many people would be unable to reach a destination, honestly, if they did not have the GPS on their phone now. How many people could figure it out? And
you have the generation like my parents, who, no problem, they can figure it out. You have the generation afterwards, you know what, yeah, we can kind of get around, but a little help is helpful. But you look at my kids, forget about it. You know, even taking the bus, for crying out loud, they have trouble doing that. It's one of those things where it is just, it's taken over the younger generation, hands down.
See, I don't even know if it's a younger generation thing now with the maps and with getting places. I think there's an awful lot of people who have just become, this has been now a thing that you're dependent on this. You get into your car and you hit home on the thing. You don't even think about it anymore. You didn't pay attention to how you got there, so you don't know how you got home. You'd figure it out probably for most people, but it's almost reflex.
Scott, you just follow the sun direction. You just follow where the sun's going. That's all you got to do. I'm going west. That's all I need to know. We've almost become a society of like in that movie WALL-E.
Yeah.
No, it's done for us.
That is not untrue. That is not untrue. All right, we got a couple minutes left here. I caught myself yesterday and today with something that shocked me. Now, I don't know how many people will be in the same boat as me, but Mike, there was a time when, for me, one of the most important times of the year was this week, which was the opening, not March break, the opening week of March Madness, of college basketball, of the playdowns. And I know something that I would have cleared my days. I would have had a TV nearby at all times to watch everything. I would have watched from noon when the games tipped off until 12 or 1 in the morning when they stopped. I almost forgot that they were on this week. I have become, it has reached a point where I don't want to say I don't care, but I guess I don't care. And I'm baffled at myself that this has happened, but I don't know if this is a sign of just aging or if the sport has changed or if teams that now that you don't have players, like once upon a time, you would go to school, players will go to school for 4 years. So you would get to know the players and know the teams. And now that guys go for 1 year and then they're out to go to the NBA, I don't know, but I was shocked this week when I realized how I just didn't care about this anymore.
It's funny because in our household, it's the opposite. You know, perhaps your priorities have just changed. You know, you had a busy week, right? You had the outdoor classic, you had the outdoor showcase. You got the radio show, you got your job with the paper. So you're go, go, go. And that's maybe, I'm going to attribute some of that to you, my friend. Here, though, in the Fortune household, my daughter is a basketball junkie. She can't get enough of it. And if it's not on the television and we're out, she's got it on her tablet. She's watching the game or watching highlights or watching the scores. And she's giving me updates all the time. Like yesterday when Kentucky lost, she was just beside herself. We got the brackets going. We got the whole thing. Now, when I was younger and I wasn't following the game as much, I had no clue when March Madness was on. I didn't pay any attention. So, you know, it's funny. Our priorities have changed as our worlds have evolved, I guess.
The one other thing that probably has kept me, and like maybe I'm the only one, because the other side of this that has probably kept me from still being engaged, I don't wager on sports.
Neither do I.
I've done it a couple times, usually in like a pool somewhere, but I've never been a pro line player or never been a go to Atlantic City or whatever. None of that stuff. So, and this is huge with that. This is huge. So I maybe stand alone, because I got to believe that with the easier access to wagering now, it's easier than it's ever been before, that there's probably a whole who are now are in game were once upon a time.
You know, it's funny you mentioned all the betting. And I know you watch, I think you watch regular television aside from your streaming services. Have you noticed all the celebrities jumping on board for a certain website that's out there? I even saw one a couple nights ago. Wayne Gretzky's involved.
Yes, in Vegas.
In Vegas. And Matthew Barnaby is involved.
Yep.
It's like, holy crow, what has happened here where these bigger names, these celebrities, are pushing this so much. It's mind-boggling to me. And again, you and I have the life experience and the understanding to know that betting can go down a very dark hole and can turn your life upside down in an instant. They're going after these younger generations, not necessarily with the Gretzky's and the Barnabys, but the flash of these websites and so on and so forth. They are getting people, and with the phones in your hand 24/7, this could be a problem, I think, potentially down the road for a lot of people.
Well, whether it's a problem or whether it just, see, I think it is changing, if it hasn't already, and maybe I'm already late to the party here, maybe it already has, but I think it's changing how and why people watch sports. And when I'm talking about March Madness for me, it wasn't about wagering on it. It was because I loved the tournament. I loved the, you know, when Michigan had the Fab Five, and for a couple of years at least, or 3 years, you got to know who these guys were and see them develop as a team. I loved that. Now it is, I would guess you're right. I would guess it is very much, almost exclusively for a lot of people, simply about the wager, the gamble, the bracket. It's always been the brackets, but I'm talking now individual game stuff. I think it has changed for sure.
It has, and I don't think it's changed for the better, unfortunately. And I think the games, and when I say games, I'll include other sports in this too, they're really stretching to grab your attention. Anything they can to keep you interested in their sport and what makes their sport the reason why you should be watching or tuning in or laying down a bet, because our sport is the one that will give you the bigger payout or will be the most interesting to watch, so on and so forth. It's, again, I'm just thankful I'm not down that rabbit hole at all.
Yeah, it is, kudos to the people who are behind it, because they are being clever in finding new ways to engage people in sticking around, because we do have a shorter attention span for sure. And I suppose that this is one way that gets people to stick around and watch, as opposed to just watching your highlights the next day or something. I don't know, but I also say
I don't even think you have to you don't even really have to watch the whole game. You can put a bet down and you can just get, like my daughter now, she's 13, she's not betting, but she can just get updates wherever and whenever she wants instantaneously on your devices. So they're going after anyone that's going to, because I guess, do the league somehow get a cut of something? They must. This all has to be approved by the commissioners. They must be getting a cut somehow to keep their sport going, potentially behind the scenes financially.
Sure, they're involved. They want this for the reason that they presumably are getting a cut, but also because, again, I think that you're right. You don't have to watch it. You can get the highlights. You can get the updates on Twitter. But if you have a wager, I bet more people are watching. Let's say you're betting on the Jays, whatever. Hopefully not as a player, Pete Rose. But if you're watching that, you're going to stick around and have more interest in watching the game just to see how it goes. But you know, it's different, as I say, different way of looking at it. I've my interest, maybe because I'm not gambling, maybe if I was gambling, I would be, as I say, way more interested in this or the NFL or even the CFL, which is, you know, I don't know. I mean, the CFL absolutely is going to want to get way more involved in the gambling side of things because they see the money.
Yeah,
I just don't know.
That's what it comes down to. It comes down to the almighty dollar to keep these players paid, to keep the teams in existence. And, you know, you look at what the NFL has done. They're just a mighty marketing machine. But again, the only thing or team I would potentially bet on in anything would be the Harlem Globetrotters winning. That's basically the only thing I think I would ever put any money down for a pretty much guarantee.
Yeah, and even that doesn't happen once every 25 or 30 years. But yes, that would be as safe a bet as there is. The one sport that I just cannot fathom how anyone bets on it is golf. Because every field starts with, 100 guys, give or take? And the chances, even when Tiger Woods is playing, he didn't win every week. Even when he was at his best, he didn't win every week. If it's two teams and one is a huge favorite, okay, maybe. But to bet on a field and pick a guy in golf, boy, you're I don't get it. Anyway, yeah, it's not my thing.
Now, I have done some. You know, you throw in 10 or 20 bucks, whatever it is, and I've gone into these big pools, and I think that's kind of fun. You pick who you think's going to be your winner, and then depending on the pool, you can pick another two or three guys who's going to be in your top 10, and based on that, you know, some cash can be divvied up. That to me is the only way I kind of do it if I do bet on golf, and it's been many years. But kind of in that pool atmosphere, if you will, as opposed to putting any money down on Vegas on just one golfer winning it all.
Yeah, as I say, I don't do it often. I did 1 year go into an NFL pool. I got roped into it for money, and I won the pool. And then I said, you know what? I am never probably going to win again. So let's just call it a day, and I'll save my money after this. That's that's the extent of my wagering. Win once and get out. Which
and book that trip on a cruise for you and Monica.
Yeah, I'm still I'm still watching the port as we're talking. The Virgin ship just took off for wherever it's going. So yeah, I'm not on it.
There you go.
That's okay.
Well, hey,
that's okay.
I'm with you. Neither am I.
not right now. Mike Fortune, always appreciate the time. Thanks for doing this today.
Hey, Scotty, to you, the family, all the best. To Ben behind the scenes, thanks as always for doing an awesome job. Enjoy your weekend, pal.
The Scott Radley Show, weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening, and do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode. And also, be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.